Hello, fellow doers and changemakers. My name is Monica, and I'd like to warmly welcome you to ISCA's podcast. We have recorded the following interview in the Integration of Refugees Through Sport project, which is funded by European Commission's Erasmus Plus Sport program. The project aims to empower people that are working or volunteering in Integration of Refugees Through Sport roles by offering in-person and online opportunities to meet, learn, gain recognition for the initiatives and projects, as well as connect with other organizations, associations, and clubs that are working with the same target group. You can find more information and resources on irts.isca.org website. We actually have quite a few online courses on the topic of integration of refugees through sport, which you can find at learn.isca.org. All of the courses are for free. Today's interview is part of an online learning course where we are sharing good examples and practices from various organizations, clubs, and associations throughout Europe. Today, I'm hosting Helen Vost from Youth Sport Trust International, and she's going to share with us what they did during the COVID-19 lockdown. It's quite inspiring, I have to say. So at the beginning, I'd like to ask you to briefly introduce yourself to our listeners and maybe share what is your motivation to work with the target group that you're working.
Okay, so thanks, Monica. I'm Helen Vost, and I'm from a sport for development charity called Youth Sport Trust International. And we are all about improving the lives of young people through play, physical activity, and sport. So I guess our motivation to work with refugees is that we absolutely believe that sport can be an effective tool to not only promote enjoyment through participation, but it's a great way of helping to develop a whole range of life skills. And I think that can be really helpful in the case of refugees and migrants.
Mm-hmm. Concretely, so what activities for refugees and migrants are you doing? If you could give us like a little bit of the overview.
Yeah, sure. I'll talk a little bit later about the work that we've been doing during COVID, because we've had a fantastic piece of online engagement with a group of young refugees in a camp in Lebanon. But we are also involved in a number of different EU-funded Erasmus Plus sport projects. And there's one of those at the moment, which actually focuses on how to upskill teachers and coaches to make sure that they include refugees in the most effective way that they can. And we are a training partner for the sports company Nike. And we've been involved in supporting a project that they have in Germany, in Berlin, which is around providing sporting opportunities for young refugees who have come to settle there. And we've been involved in training young coaches and also working with teachers to best integrate refugees.
Thank you. So mostly you would be working with teachers and coaches and like on one side and then also directly with refugees and migrants.
Yeah, that's right.
Could you briefly describe what happened during Corona lockdown with your activities and how did you adapt?
Okay, so I think for us, like many organisations, COVID-19 was a major threat and a bit of a disaster, because as an organisation, what we had mainly been doing was delivering face-to-face training overseas. And then all of a sudden we couldn't travel anymore and it was like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do now? So again, I think like many organisations, we thought, okay, how can we be positive about this? And what can we learn from it? And so we quickly decided we needed to try and adapt to be able to make an online offer. And it was really fortuitous for me that I had met in the UK a guy who had spent a lot of time working in a refugee camp in Beirut in Lebanon. And He was absolutely nuts about cricket, and he decided that he wanted to find a way of giving young people living in this camp an opportunity to play cricket. They'd never heard of cricket. They don't play cricket in the Lebanon, but he, being a typical Brit, nuts about cricket, thought this is what he was going to do. And he found a patch of unused land. And I think the first day that he said he was going to do some cricket training, about two kids turned up. And then the next day there was like 200, because there was such curiosity as to what he was doing. And when I met him, I'd just been so impressed by what he'd done and his motivation. And he just talked so movingly about the skill level of the kids, just how interested they were to take part, how much enjoyment they got from it. And I reached out to him and said, look, we're grounded because of COVID. But I've always wanted to find if there was a way that we as an organisation could help support the work that you're doing in the Lebanon. And would you be interested in us perhaps working with some of the young people that you have started to teach to play cricket? Perhaps we could look to develop other skills, develop their leadership skills, so that they could then perhaps become young coaches themselves. And he was quite curious, because he said, oh, I've never really heard about leadership through sport. You know, I don't know how this would work. How are you going to do it online? But yeah, let's give it a go. And he'd also enthused his wife so much that she's working with young people in the camp as well. And she's a real dynamo of energy. And she said, yeah, let's try it. Let's make it work. There were all sorts of obstacles, but we got through those, and it kind of flew. So what they were really keen to do was provide something for girls first, because within the culture there, boys get all the opportunities. Girls traditionally get married off young, have children, tend not to have that much opportunity. And Richard, the volunteer, and his wife said it would be lovely if you could work with a group of girls first, which is what we did. So we offered a 6 weeks course to start with, and we would do training of between 1 and 2 hours every Friday afternoon. So we found a time that worked for a group of young people, and we had to find a translator. We found a cricket coach who was quite good at English, so he could do translation. And two of my colleagues and I used to join each week. We started training the group of young women, and they just responded so positively that I think it was as rewarding for us to do the work as it was for them. And they just made so much progress in such a short space of time that we were then asked to do the training with a group of boys, and then with another group of girls, and then with another group of boys. And it just grew from there, really. And it was just lovely to be able to grow a relationship with young people in another country, but using that method of Zoom. I think COVID, we all started out finding Zoom rather frustrating, doing all these boring meetings, because we didn't quite know how to make the best of Zoom. And I think we probably all learned to get better at it as time progressed. Now I feel as though I still have most of my meetings on Zoom rather than face to face.
I was having a lot of goosebumps while you were explaining everything, and it's just so amazing to hear, like, how when people come together and where there's a will, like, and this, like, yeah, let's try it and see what happens, how it actually, like, it just multiplies, and then there's more interest. Okay, so as far as I understood, so you did then the courses. Could you maybe tell us a bit more about this initiative or project? I don't know how we call it, how it was. So you already mentioned that you had courses for boys and girls. Could you give us a bit more details in it?
Essentially, we repeated the same course four times, but culturally, in the Middle East, it's often usual to work with girls and boys separately. And so we obviously respected that. We did have a male and a female trainer leading on each of the courses. And we would take different topics each week that we would work on. And we would also set homework each week for the young people to do and prepare for the next week. So to give you an example, we set out by asking the young girls in the first session to identify who their role models were and what did they think were qualities of leadership, and what qualities did they themselves think that they had. And they were very shy to start with and quite reluctant to talk themselves. And then as soon as one did, then another one wanted to talk. And it was lovely to see how they would stand up. They'd come to the camera and say, my coach, it was often my coach is my role model. And we think that teamwork is a really important quality in leadership, or communication is a really important quality. And we would say, okay, you pick three qualities from all the ones that were shared, and then your homework for this week is to really think about how you as a person demonstrate those qualities. And then the next week they'd come back and then they would share with us. And what we hadn't anticipated happening, but which happened really quickly, and I was so impressed, was their language skills developed enormously, because they wanted to be able to communicate in English. And, as an aside, I find it embarrassing that so many English people have rubbish language skills, and yet all of you people in Europe, you're not only fluent in English, but you're fluent in three or four other languages as well. So to be engaging with young people whose backstory was horrendous, they'd left war-torn Syria, some of them leaving, members of their family behind, had come to settle in a country that wasn't that welcoming. They were living in a camp that was overcrowded, dangerous, originally set up as a temporary camp for Palestinian refugees back in the late 1940s, and now living in very cramped and difficult conditions, had often had very little education themselves, but they were just so keen to learn and so enthusiastic that we were just blown away by just how wonderful they were to work with. So I've gone off piste a bit, but as the course progressed, we might take a session that would focus on communication. So if you're going to be a young leader, how do you use your voice to engage with other people, other young people, children that you might be working with? You can use the tone, you can use the volume, you can think about the way that you sound, how you make people feel comfortable with you. And then we might focus on skills, so that if you are working with a group of children, there may be some who have better skills than others. How do you make sure that if you are running a session, you can adapt activities so that some might be slightly easier for the less able, or slightly more difficult for the more competent, but make it so that children are actively involved and there's a positive experience for everyone, and you don't have just the good ones leading the session and then the others standing to one side, not getting involved. And there was just so much willingness to think, oh, actually, if we did the bowling in a different way, then that way we could get more children involved, or this is how we're going to position the fielders. And I think we were quite surprised at just how easy the children found it to think about different ways of doing things and could handle quite complicated concepts really, really well.
Thank you so much. There's so many things resonating in me, like seriously. But what I can, what I like felt very much was when you said that they were taking this opportunity, they were very engaged, and yeah, because they don't have so many opportunities as we do, right? So they, whatever they get, they're fully in and just take it. So that's so precious. And I can imagine the effect it has on them, the impact on a personal level, and hopefully also it will create like better opportunities in the future.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, sometimes, you know, I know with my own kids, they weren't always that keen to go to school and they weren't that keen to do their homework. And I think education is just, you know, something that kids feel they have to do and it's taken for granted. Whereas it really struck us that these young people we were working with in the Lebanon, they knew that education was their only hope really to a better life. So they just grabbed it, and they were always on time. They always did their homework. They always wanted to participate. And it's just wonderful to see how responsive they are. And, you know, it gives me goosebumps now sometimes to read the poems that they've written. And the other thing that really struck me, and there was one particular boy, you could tell that his attitude to girls completely changed. And he kind of became an advocate for girls should have the same opportunities as boys. And that was really impressive, I think, because that wasn't his cultural background. But I think because of seeing that the girls were playing cricket and the skill level that the girls had, he kind of really took it on board. And I've heard him speak saying, you know, well, girls should have just as much opportunity as boys. So to hear a young boy who I think is 15 saying that, when he's grown up in a culture where women aren't generally given opportunities, girls aren't opportunity, that's when you think actually sport can be so powerful and it can bring about change. And I just thought that was wonderful to hear him say, yeah, you know, absolutely, girls should have just as much opportunity as boys.
Goosebumps. It's so nice to hear these stories. Like always when I talk to someone and when there's these stories coming out, it's just so amazing, and it makes you feel hopeful, you know, that we can still change things, right? Even though it's a drop in the ocean, but it's like one person at a time, one boy, one girl at a time, and they will be also the change makers in their own communities, in their own small group of friends, you know, and then that will multiply.
Yeah, I think that's so true, Monica, because one of the things that I find really challenging in my role is where do we work? Because there just seems to be so much need everywhere. And you, as you say, it can feel as though it is a drop in the ocean. But then when you connect at a human level and you see how just one person can really grow and it can change their attitude and their aspirations, then you know that actually you're doing a good thing and it is making a difference to somebody's life. So I think for us, we are always trying to capacity build wherever we work, and we're always trying to create something that has a chance of being sustainable. And I think where we've been really lucky with the work that we've done with the refugee camp Shatila in Beirut, the Lebanon, is we've had the partners there to work with. You know, this couple are so committed. They've kind of made it their life's commitment that they are going to set up a school that they are going to provide as many opportunities as they can. And so I feel that there will be an ongoing difference that can be made. And that's one of the things that has to drive us in terms of where we choose to work, just to try and make sense of it all, really. You know, if there's a way of making it sustainable, then you know that you're making a long-term difference rather than just a really short-term thing.
Thank you so much. I actually wanted to ask you, like, how was this partnership? So how did you actually come about? With whom did you partner there? So as far as I understood now, it was actually you teamed up with individuals, or how was it?
It started with teaming up with an individual who was a management consultant with a big company called McKinsey, and he had been seconded to work with an NGO that was operating in the Lebanon. Then his wife, who had been working in publishing, was introduced to the camp visiting him, and she decided to stay and met some other individuals who wanted to do some work in the camp, and they actually set up a small empowerment centre called Al Sama, which is Sky, is Arabic for sky. And drawing on the skill set that they had, they were offering cricket lessons, yoga lessons, and some English lessons. And then they've had some students work there that developed poetry. And so it's been a real sort of eclectic mix, but it's kind of shown how effective a really committed group of individuals can be. And now they are moving towards getting NGO status and setting up a school, and they've got some funding from different funders in the UK, and they've got a board of trustees, and it's really exciting to be involved in something from the outset, and you see how it grows, and it grows for all the right reasons, because there can be, you know, some very long established charities which do great work, but sometimes you feel there's lots of bureaucracy and administration. I think what I've loved doing with the refugee camp in Lebanon is just being at real grassroots level and seeing how something is just growing and making a difference quite quickly.
Mm. It's so amazing to hear, like, how it actually grew from individuals now, like, into an NGO. I'm curious to hear how it's going to develop in the future.
Yeah, like, so much. Yeah. Oh, well, I cannot wait. I am so keen to go out there and actually meet some of the young people that have been trained, and, you know, to sort of follow their story, how they develop, because they are all motivated, I think, by the fact that they know that Lebanon is not their country, and they feel as though, almost as if the future of Syria is in their hands, you know, that they are change makers, and maybe there, just maybe, there is a way that they can be part of some sort of resolution in what is such a difficult situation. And, you know, Lebanon itself has faced all sorts of problems. You may remember there was a big explosion in the dock area, and so they've had food shortages, electricity shortages. You know, they are living in very, very difficult circumstances, but they're just so resilient and so optimistic. It's wonderful to see.
Yeah, they don't give up, right? Because life gives them so many hardships and troubles, where for us the hardships are completely different, right? Not even comparable. So, No. Unfortunately, we don't. Where we born, we're not in control where we're born. But I guess at some point, maybe, well, we have control what we want to do. But then again, the environment affects that a lot. So you have, again, limited opportunities. So, yeah, I'm crossing fingers for these youngsters that they get the best out of it somehow, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think it was really brought home to me as well, being at MOVE Congress last November, you know, hearing the stories of the young refugees from Afghanistan who had faced such adversity and had to leave at such short notice, but, you know, took the opportunity to come to another country and really wanted to contribute to another country as well. You know, I think it's so sad that sometimes so many people have a negative perception about refugees and migrants, and, you know, it just seems that nothing could be further from the truth, really.
Yeah, indeed. I think there's a lot about media and how we grow up, right, and the influence we get, unfortunately. And we don't see the human being behind it, you know. We see a label, a number, in that sense. So, but I think, like, slowly the things are changing. Again, also with, like, this, similarly to the boy that you mentioned, I think also here we're slowly changing. Of course, we're working with these target groups, so it's different. But I think there's still the perception out there, you know, that it's something bad, that they're going to take our jobs or something. But they're just human beings like us, right? Yeah. It's such a humane thing to be, but tricky sometimes to actually do because of fear, because of a lot of things. So yeah. I'm curious. What challenges did you face during the execution of this project, and how did you tackle them?
Okay, so fortunately, there was only a 2-hour time difference between the UK and Lebanon, so we didn't have an issue with timings. We certainly needed a translator, and sometimes one translator was better at English than another, so there were some issues with language sometimes. But not too serious. Connectivity was a bit of an issue, if electricity was down, you know, we might have to delay the start of the session because people couldn't connect. If young people couldn't get to the education centre, which is where we were trying to connect with a group of young people, then we would have some people joining remotely by a mobile phone, and they might drop in and drop out. So I think communication was a bit of an issue from one week to the next. And of course, you never knew whether that was going to be the case. Sometimes there were interruptions. I mean, I vividly remember one day when there was gunshots in the background, and what really moved me was the young people were used to hearing gunshots, and they were worried that we would be scared, and we were the people in England doing the online training, and yet they were concerned that we would be scared, and we were like scared for them. So that was very unexpected when that happened. They had a pet cat in the Alzheimer's Centre, and one day we spent about 10 minutes introducing one of our trainers' pet cats to their pet cat. But it was silly things like that which kind of really helped to build the relationship, and it was just lovely every time a session started. You know, the young people would wave and say, hello, Coach Kevin, hello, Coach Viv. And I think I'd always felt that Zoom was very impersonal until then, but it kind of made me realise that actually you really can connect online, and you can look to build a relationship. So by having that sort of regular contact, we kind of felt we all got to know each other. Some weeks were better than others, but it was the communication piece that was the biggest challenge to overcome. I think the language less so. We could do, obviously you could do questions in the chat room and things could get translated into Arabic. And sometimes, even when it's a completely different language, when you really concentrate, you can still kind of understand what somebody is saying to you. That probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but you could sort of feel that you're getting the answers that you're looking for. So not too many challenges.
Yeah, I think it's also different with them because they don't have internet as we do and connections, right? So I'm not sure how it works in the camp, but I'm assuming it's mostly based on the mobile data, or I don't know.
Yeah.
What are the results of this project in for you? I'm curious now that it seems it's done.
We're not doing any specific online training at the moment, because what we really want to do is follow up with a visit as soon as we can, and to really see if there's a way that we can become embedded in their plans for the future, and to do some face-to-face training to support the online training that we've done. Maybe do some more work around upskilling teachers and practitioners, so to do the capacity building piece that I was talking about earlier, and maybe to get involved in other ways in which we could use sport in terms of other lessons that they're doing, so maybe introducing some activity into other subjects, because there's been some research that shows that young people's brains are more alert if they don't have to sit still for too long. And of course, we all went through the traditional ways of learning where you sit and look at a whiteboard or a blackboard for hours on end, whereas now introducing movement and activity into the classroom can really be a boost. And we've had some experience in the UK of how you can use sport as an effective way of developing language skills, because you can do the instruction in the language, and if young people are enjoying the activity, then they're very receptive to learning the language. And you can just use sport in so many ways, linked to so many subjects, like maths with the size of pitches, and biology in terms of what happens in your body when you're doing sport. I think it's such a wonderful way to actually bring so many different subjects alive. So we're really interested in building a longer term relationship with the Al Samah Centre and the refugee camp, so that we can be sort of embedded in their future plans for developing the school, and working with, many more cohorts of young people. Mm. But absolutely, I can't wait to get to visit and just meet the young people, yes, that we worked with, because I kind of feel as I've got to know some of them now.
Are you planning the visit soon, actually?
I think it's going to have to be next financial year, because we haven't had a brilliant year in terms of income because of COVID. But I've asked my trustees to sanction a visit, sort of this coming spring. So hopefully we'll get out there April, May time.
Crossing fingers for that too. So we're going to close slowly, and now I'd like to ask you, what are the three things that you've learned from this project that you did? It can be professional, personal. I'm guessing there's more than three, but let's focus on three and see where it goes.
Just one thing I did forget to mention was we have had feedback that some of those young people that we've worked with have progressed, and they they have become young leaders and they are actually working with groups of young people themselves. So that's been really positive. Okay, three things I've learned. I would say amazing resilience on the part of the refugees, completely blown away by how resilient the young people have been. How keen and willing they have been to embrace new opportunities and be really, really willing to try and do things differently. And also just how much progress actually can be made in a very, very short space of time. You don't have to, I mean, we gave up some time. It was easy for us to give up time. They didn't know what they were taking on, but they gave up time on a weekly basis. And yet it felt that together we were able to achieve something really special. So I think those are probably the three key things that I've learned. Just get on and do it. Persevere and don't be put off by the obstacles when they come up. Just find a way of working through them. And I guess, you know, it really demonstrates that sport really does have the power to change lives.
I think you couldn't close it in a better way.
Well, that was a Nelson Mandela quote, not mine.
Helen, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and thoughts and the feels and the passion. Is there something else that you would like to share with people listening to our conversation?
No, I don't think so, Monica. It's been a pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Helen. And let's cross fingers that you go and visit soon and that the youngsters will have a brighter future.
Absolutely. Thanks.